Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. We bloody told you, didn't we? Scotland beat France at the weekend and we are heading to Cardiff to win the Six Nations. Lads, how are you feeling about that, Alan?
Did we tell people that they were going to win?
I think so. People have got short memories.
Right? We all predicted a loss, I think.
Yeah, I think. I specifically remember thinking about a 7-point loss.
Well, it wasn't. So you were wrong, Alan.
Come Sunday morning, I did say, and on Saturday, actually, I said to a few people, I've got a feeling based on nothing that we're going to do it. We're going to win.
Cool, man.
Well, I'm just saying. I think it's interesting.
But yeah, we can win the Six Nations. We can be top of the Six Nations by 4:30 on Saturday.
Which is all that matters, really.
Yeah.
Who cares about October?
And then it's cancelled.
Yeah, it's over.
The Halloween Massacre. It's all cancelled. Absolutely fine. Well, Alan and Matt are here, and you guys have been chatting to us absolutely tons on Twitter. That's Thistle Rugby Pod. On Instagram, Thistle underscore Rugby underscore Pod. And surprisingly quiet in the mailbag. Nobody comes to the mailbag with good news. They only come with deeply emotional gripes after Scotland have lost. But if you do feel like giving us your longer form thoughts, that is the Thistle Rugby at gmail.com.
So can we also beg for some iTunes reviews as well?
Yes, please do.
They're helpful for us and much appreciated.
We have got a growing community. This has been our biggest ever Six Nations by a long, long way in terms of listeners, followers, subscribers, shares. So keep the good work going. There's still Scottish rugby fans out there that don't know about us.
That's the thing. When I go to Murrayfield and I ask every single person I see, have you heard of the Thistle?
And they're like, is that the one with Al Kellick and Mossy?
Yeah, exactly.
The one that's advertising everywhere in Murrayfield. It's embarrassing. Imagine that.
I know.
Anyway, so please do give us some reviews on iTunes if you can. Obviously, we're going to be talking about that big win against France on Sunday and then looking ahead to the trip to Cardiff at the weekend on not so super Saturday anymore. But first, we want to touch a little bit on the news coming out of Edinburgh this week. 17-year-old Jordan Venter is going to be hooking up with Edinburgh at the end of the season, or should I say the end of his school year, because he is joining straight from school in South Africa. Cue much discussion about the role of sort of long-term project players in Scottish rugby. I think it's our first foray into it from school level outside of the country. I know that Matt and Alan have differing views on this, so I'm just going to sit back and let them fight about it for about 5 minutes. Matt, do you want to have an opening gambit?
I can't actually remember what your view is, so I was going to take the opposite side.
I never really specifically gave
Yeah, exactly. Classic.
I just said I disagreed with yours.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, a few people were complaining about it and saying that it's sort of like A few people were genuinely saying it's like child labor. I was like, come on. They're going to take good care of him when he comes over to Scotland.
To be fair, he's pretty big. He'd be quite a good child labourer.
one true. Prominent Scottish rugby journalist of a paper of record described it as borderline abusive.
I'm sorry, he's coming over to like be a professional rugby athlete.
In Edinburgh, for God's sake.
Exactly. Like,
it's not like he's going to build a stadium in Qatar.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, maybe he's over to build the new stadium at Edinburgh.
Mini Murrayfield.
They're going to steal his passport as he comes in.
Yeah, as you said, he's quite a strong looking lad.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he did an absolutely wonderful job.
But so the point I made in response to this guy was that when Mark Bennett moved to Clermont, no one had a problem with it. And it was never once seen as like taking advantage of an individual. And the same with when Murdo McAndrew went to Clermont, it was seen as like a great thing for their rugby development.
Yeah. And my sort of retort to that specific comparison is that Clermont isn't owned by the French Rugby Union.
Yep.
And therefore, that decision was made completely separate to whether that would be helpful to the French national side. It was only looked at within the kind of confines of, will this help Clermont?
Yeah.
Whereas, and whilst I'm sure Scottish Rugby would say that this was an Edinburgh decision, obviously Edinburgh's owned by the SOU, and I guarantee you don't make any decisions without sign-off from the SOU, there is obviously that, there is part of this where he's been brought over because potentially he could play for Scotland in 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. It reflects the new eligibility rules. And I think it's been happening particularly in France, where they've had academies in the Pacific Islands.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I read at the weekend that Toulouse have an academy in Chile.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe it's just tapping into like Argentinian and Chilean rugby players. I think there is that kind of... there is a question over whether it's just, once again, like exploiting loopholes. And the longer you extend that residency period, the younger you're going to bring people over. And I think particularly with Pacific Islanders, who sometimes struggle to settle in places like France and aren't given the right sort of pastoral care, it can lead to issues.
Yeah.
I think the other issue... more from the SOU perspective is, what does it say about the current academy structures and, I suppose, Super Six and the ability of those sort of pathways to produce Scottish players?
Sure.
I guarantee you there is not one 17-year-old boy in Scotland who looks like him. He is a freak of nature.
If you've not seen him, you can get onto our Twitter. I think we put it up there. He is an absolute beast.
Yeah, I agree with that. But then once again, you are taking quite a big chance to bring someone over from South Africa who is only 17 and everyone else might catch up with it. He might not develop into...
As you were saying.
And I would almost rather that chance was taken with someone in
Scotland. Yeah.
As you were saying off air though, the financial risk that the SRU will have put out on this is surely extremely limited.
I'd like to think so, yeah.
And if I can, I think Kevin Miller gets a weekly shout out on the pod because he's the best stats man in Scottish rugby at the moment. His view is that in 5 years' time, when this guy's hitting 22, Glasgow and Edinburgh will have maybe 12 to 14 centre slots across their squads to fill, and only three of this season's incumbents will be under the age of 31.
Yeah.
So obviously there's plenty. So his view is that there.
That's 5 years' time, right? You'd like to think that the academies and the Super Six are going to be producing people that are ready for international rugby.
So there is going to be opportunity for homegrown players as well as, you know, this one guy. That's not to say that Edinburgh and Glasgow are not going to sign any foreign centres now.
Yeah, it's not like Edinburgh have gone out and got like 3 17-year-olds Africans. And
yes,
start block if someone is good enough to play for Edinburgh Scotland, there's going to be opportunities there.
I do agree.
This guy's going to be playing for the Ayrshire Bulls next season.
Yeah, fine.
Nah, mate, straight into National 2 for Stu Mel.
If that happens, then I'm totally on board with this signing.
It is an interesting one because it does seem to be a shift in policy from...
But also, like, where's he come from? Like, we missed Kyle Steyn, who was like a grown man playing professional rugby. Like, it was literally his like drunk uncle who told Tooney.
Presumably, and then we get this kid. And presumably he's not been picked up by any of the South African... Because why would you come over?
Well, I think normally...
South Africa. 18s?
Yeah. He plays because he goes to a lot of weird school names in South Africa. It's like Paul Roos Gymnasium.
Yeah.
But I think normally they do like their schools week and then they all get picked up by whatever the Craven region week. They're in. But he doesn't actually finish school until December.
It is a bit odd.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's literally gone into his final year in the last month. So it's like someone starting sixth year and them getting signed by Clermont, but then finishing.
Isn't this just the global sort of rugby economy working, though? In that the opportunities for a 17-year-old South African player, money-wise and possibly rugby-wise.
It's a neoliberal agenda.
It's a good opportunity for him. He's got a great chance to come over here and make more money than he would in South Africa and play good rugby.
Yeah.
Edinburgh top of Conference B. It's probably why he came. Opportunity to go to Rodney Parade, the sports ground at Connacht, the ones he's been reading about as he's been growing up playing rugby in South Africa.
He did grow up in the same town as Doohan.
Ah.
So they're like, well, one guy works. Yeah,
exactly.
So one absolute
be the next
that
Doohan.
Town is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's get another one.
I think he's from the same town, but they didn't make reference to whether they knew each other. I think it was just like a fact they chucked into the press release.
I think we'd know if they knew each other.
Yeah.
That would be chucked out. 6-year age difference between them, really, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair. I think you can spin it both ways. Ultimately, I think there's a lot of other issues. So,
is that it?
Yeah. Done.
I'm happy to go with that.
That seems fair enough.
Let's move on.
Well, we will watch Jordan's progression with interest here at the Thistle.
Yeah.
And if you do have any views, get in touch with us on Twitter or in the mailbag. Should we jump into Scotland, France then?
Are we not going to quickly chat, but guess who?
We can. So
what was the final poll result
I just there? Looked it up. So this was last week. Alan revealed that he thought during the Scottish National Anthem, everyone was shouting, guess who, not against who.
Yeah.
Which caused everybody an awful lot of...
And you did maintain that a lot of people were in the same boat as you.
I said that I think you will find a healthy proportion of people in that ground currently have previously said guess who.
So we put it to the test.
So we put it to the test in the poll on Twitter. It's obviously nationally representative sample on Twitter. 7.7% of people said that they believed it was guess who.
Which is pretty big, right?
What was the sample size?
So that is a total of 4,928 people at Murrayfield every time shouting guess who.
So 5,000, basically.
5,000, yeah.
Basically 5,000 people are shouting guess who. I'm telling you, it is widespread.
It's not widespread.
It is widespread. Mate, bigger percentages than the coronavirus, and everyone's going fucking mental.
I personally would like to self-isolate from people shouting guess who.
But then you did have sort of like a big percentage, rather than saying, we didn't think it was this, we said, is this a joke?
What, are you getting at Alan's polling methodology now?
I am, actually.
Well, I think it's, there was actually quite a few people on the thread of where we were discussing what people thought that were saying that kind of showed a little bit of solidarity.
I know, it was interesting. I was glad to
but
see
how many,
it.
But what was the absolute number of people who said that they actually thought that? Do we remember? It was tiny.
Like two. But that's on our Twitter. And then, look.
I'm willing to extrapolate that to the whole Murrayfield population.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's true.
All right.
Killjoy. Well, look, it's nice to have other people there with me in my time.
Sure. Sure. That's nice of you.
What do you shout when you're at Murrayfield? Get in touch and let us know if it's guess who or something else. Obviously, Scotland were playing on Sunday. We all chanted guess who when we were together at Matt's on Sunday for lunchtime.
It's solidarity.
I thought it was nice that we all stood arm in arm to sing the national anthem at your flat.
Yeah.
I think everyone should do that when they're watching at home.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing. And Scotland ran out victorious. Very exciting afternoon. I can't remember enjoying watching a Scotland game for a wee while.
I think probably that Scotland Argentina game in terms
of the summer.
Yeah.
Two summers.
It was two summers ago.
Yeah, two summers.
That was when Horan and Hastings absolutely turned up.
Yeah.
And trying to think back. I think back to maybe the second half of the Scotland England game.
Yeah.
But no, it was a good. It was a great game, and I think once that red card came in, I think we were all relatively confident that Scotland were going to be able to see that game out.
Yeah.
I was still a wee bit worried because I felt that whenever France got the ball, they were making yards with ease. Yeah. And you just, you never know with them. Like, there can be, there were a few moments of individual brilliance in that team, particularly in attack.
Yes.
They had a lot more cutting edge and a lot more, actually, they just got over the gain line a lot easier than Scotland did.
Well, I guess just looking at the two kind of big incidents. First one, yellow card.
For the tip tackle.
For the sort of tip tackle.
Yeah.
I know at the time we were a little bit like, you sent him off the field.
It did look quite bad. And then,
yeah,
I don't know, you sort of take it back. But I think the fact that Paul Williams was initially just going to give a penalty would have been, and that's when I kind of thought, like, it's just going to be a penalty. It's not going to be our day. And I think we did actually get quite a lot of luck in the end.
Yes, I think so. I think yellow was probably the right decision there. I think you've probably seen them given as red, but I think it was a funny one.
If anything, it was almost, Philliam says, kind of pushing him down to the ground made it a lot worse than the actual kind of tackle itself.
Mm. It's a difficulty, once again, of a player setting himself into a tackle and not being able to sort of change the direction of his movement and then someone else affecting the tackle.
Yes.
So you're completely committed. You know, I'm sure he wasn't trying to drive Gilchrist's head into the ground.
Yes.
And then the second instant, obviously the melee.
How exciting.
And then Jamie Ritchie's nose getting smeared all over his face. Like,
he's a black belt in judo, though. He can deal with this shit.
Yeah. He did. I mean, he puts his body in through horrible amounts of pain during any given game.
Yeah. I'd say he arguably got kind of a punch in retaliation when he pulled the guy to the floor with him.
I don't think he was quite reaching to kind of get a contact.
But he tried to.
So in theory, do you think, in theory, Jamie Ritchie should have got a red card?
For reacting.
For punching.
I don't believe he actually swung properly.
When he was on the ground?
No. I think he did.
It wasn't even a swing. It was like a jab.
Yeah, it was more of a jab.
He was sort of getting his face battered into the ground, though.
But I don't think he should be a red card. But I think there is an argument to be said that if a punch constitutes a red card, he could have been red carded.
I mean, judging by the salt being thrown by all the French fans at us after the game.
Oh, mate. How many French trolls are there?
Digging out my old school French to translate this stuff. It was
what was the best one? It was at the end of the day, we're not British. Yeah. Condolences.
It's like, at the end of the day, we're French, you're British. Lol. Like, right. Cheers.
But ultimately, that sort of painted the picture for the rest of the game. I've jotted down talking points here. Defense is a talking point. It is. We've conceded four tries over the whole tournament.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I know with your points about France making it over the gain line taken into consideration, I thought it was a very impressive Scottish defensive performance again.
Yeah, well, I think actually that was a deliberate strategy. And I think when Scotland were going into the tackle, they were trying to go in twos and threes and sort of do that choke tackle, because I think they were concerned about France getting the offloads away. I think the defense overall, the structure was good. And I don't think they were... I mean, they made a lot of tackles compared to France.
Yes.
A lot more. And I can't really remember too many misses, but it was just I think in that attempt to hold players up, it was maybe a bit too passive. But then again, it kind of seemed as if they were dealing with Dupont pretty well.
Yeah.
A few of the French runners like Olivon, Vahamina, main good yard, but someone like Willem, sir, I thought was pretty anonymous.
I thought there was an awful lot of individual instances where Scotland were making dominant tackles. I think there's a decent handful of those, and particularly in the first half when they were clearly targeting high to try and force the turnover and stop the offload. That was a pretty effective strategy.
Yeah, I thought there was like pockets of dominant tackles, but there was definitely times when France were making yards with quite relative ease.
Can every tackle be dominant?
No, it can't. But you can also...
You can stop people at source, right?
Yeah. I think ultimately there was definitely times in that first half where France were making sort of 2-3 yards per phase without much trouble.
Mm.
But saying that, there was also moments where you were seeing kind of Gilchrist and Brown doing these big kind of dominant hits. Ritchie and Watson, as you said, were kind of going high sometimes to try and get that turnover. So I think it was good. I'm just not sure it was as great as everyone was making out. I think a lot, the reason France only scored two tries wasn't, it was probably more to do with their deficiencies rather than Scotland's defence.
Yeah, I'd also say that Scotland probably benefited from turnovers at key points.
Yeah.
So I think the amount of turnovers that particularly Watson, and I'm not sure who would have been second behind him in the stats. I'm tempted to say Richie, but that might just be because he was playing six.
Not sure.
I think they were all affected at quite telling times. Like when Scotland were under the cosh, DuPont sort of ran back into the ruck and Watson turned him over. A few points as well when Watson, rather than affecting a penalty, just ripped the ball completely off someone as well. Just completely took the momentum out of the French attack. So I think they were kind of the same in the Italian game as well, right? Won a lot of turnovers.
Yeah, absolutely. That Richie Watson axis with Fraser Brown and or Stuart McInally sort of chipping in from the front row is really, really effective in terms of on the ground, which is really impressive to see. What do you make of all the comments about Scotland having their grit back? So Rory Sutherland, Gilchrist, and then that sort of duo combination of Richie and Watson, who just look horribly menacing. Imagine both of them tackling you. That'd be so bad.
I mean, yeah, it'd be horrific. It's been good because I think whilst obviously, again, Richie and Watson playing well against Italy is always good. It's kind of almost like pretty standard and
you expect
expected,
it,
right? Whereas I actually think both of them were a little bit anonymous and were beaten in the Ireland and England games. So to come up against a French back row, which includes Aldrete, who's potentially like the best player of the Six Nations so far, Charles Olivon, and then I can't actually remember the sixth name.
Crowe.
Yeah, but who have been performing well and to come out on top. And I actually thought Haining played pretty well, to be honest. So,
yeah, agreed.
So I think it's a pretty great sign.
Yeah, I think in terms of sort of, I suppose one of the greatest tests of like a rugby team's grit is how they hold up in the scrum. And the scrum has been such a positive. And I had said that before, that maybe this French team, unlike French teams of old, didn't actually have great scrummagers. But I thought that Sutherland and Ferguson absolutely dominated that area.
Completely.
Like, won a lot of penalties.
They're both very handy in the loose as well.
Exactly. Really good work rate. You can see them doing a lot. I think gave Scotland quite a lot of ball, good ball to work with, which they maybe necessarily didn't actually capitalize on. But I think, in terms of the holding up on the scrum and actually being dominant in the scrum, that was, that's been a really positive of the tournament.
I don't understand how Rory Sutherland hasn't been. I get that he's had injuries, but he's not like 23 or 24, right? He's 27. Been around for a long time.
Yes, but he was late to pro rugby as well because he didn't initially get picked. He played Scotland under 18s and probably under 20s, but then he initially didn't get like an academy contract.
Okay.
Because he was at Hoik and then he went to Bigger.
Okay.
And then he went to Gala under George Graham.
And that's
when he got picked up by Edinburgh. So he's like a late developer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He was still young, but...
I just wonder how he wasn't picked up by the system. It's kind of...
I think he was initially a back row at under 18 level. And maybe it took a bit of time to be like, right, actually, you could be a prop. Because I played against him when he was playing number 8.
All right, big dog.
Well, he was absolutely terrifying.
And now he's an absolute terrifying beast.
Yeah. Just moved up to the front row. I think it's a few things.
We talked a lot about it. I think we talked about it in the first couple of rounds as well. Are you still concerned, despite the three tries that we did score, about Scotland's ability to break down a defence once we get into those sort of key areas?
Yeah, I think there is definitely moments, especially between the 22s, when Scotland will do sort of four or five phases, and it doesn't really feel like we've got much to give. And it's a little bit static, and I think we really struggle. And then we don't really have that great a kicking game to be able to kind of play that way. Like Hastings is okay, Ali Price is okay,
yeah,
and then Johnson Harris can't really kick.
I thought Hastings kicked well at the weekend. I think it was one of his better kicking performances.
Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah, it's all right.
Is that it?
I just think there is definitely something lacking from an attacking standpoint. And we're almost kind of waiting for either the French to make a mistake or for kind of a moment of magic from Hogg or someone else.
No, I agree. I think it's kind of the same in the Ireland match in particular, maybe a bit in the Italy, that the more Scotland get the ball, more phrases they go through, the less comfortable they look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's just sort of a lack of direction and attack as to what they're trying to achieve. I think the other thing that's just been disappointing since the World Cup and during the Six Nations is just the lack of inventiveness in the back line. You don't need to do a strike move off every play, but there were a few instances of Scotland having a scrum in sort of the middle of the pitch or, you know, in between the halfway and the 22 and either not securing the ball or just sort of doing something I felt a bit pedestrian, a bit predictable in attack. When you've got people like Hogg, Kinghorn, Maitland,
Chris Harris.
You want Hastings to be taking the ball to the line, or you want Hastings to be getting the ball sort of at kind of second receiver or some sort of different play off Johnson. You want to be getting those guys involved and trying to unlock defences. I don't think we're doing that enough at the moment.
I do think that there was a huge step up in the sort of clinical finishing of this Scotland team. I think the two tries that were put over for Maitland.
Yeah, very I was just going to say that.
Under pressure passing, and Hastings had a big part to play in both of those.
Yeah.
Initially with that sort of break, which he does very well on the outside.
I love Richie's
little...
His hips
just start... They sort of flick out. It's really weird.
I love Richie's little roll ball in behind Hastings to set up Maitland.
Yeah,
it's
so good.
It's something like confidence to get in there, first receiver, still draws the man.
Yeah.
Two perfect passes.
And something that not a lot of people have talked about for the first try, Grant Gilchrist off the deck at scrum half.
Too good.
Left-hander.
Who was it that passed it inside to Hastings? I can't remember, but Gilchrist once again gave a long pass from that.
Oh, did
phase.
He?
Yeah.
He's a scrum half at heart. Absolutely enormous scrum half. But that one for that try is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was encouraging to see that, even like Harris making that was probably like the biggest break in the game and Scotland eventually finishing that.
I'd say the biggest break of his career.
Right, it could have been as well. Only break in the Scotland shirt.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Harris had a very good game.
Interestingly,
on both sides of the ball,
missed 4 of 12 tackle attempts, which if we were saying he got brought in for his defence, isn't a particularly great stat.
I mean, a few of those were on Vakatawa.
Yeah. I did actually.
No one could really tackle him.
There's a few times where he sort of slowed Vakatawa down and then kind of almost like rolled off. And then Vakatawa was sort of taken down, which is almost like a success, right?
The thing is, you're not going to come up against many players like Vakatawa in world rugby.
Yeah.
Definitely not in Six Nations. Nick Tompkins look pretty good so far.
Different type of player though, isn't he?
Against England he was breaking through quite a lot of tackles.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I do feel a little bit though that again Harris and Johnson just back to the point maybe about a lack of cutting edge.
Yeah.
I just don't seem to want to use Johnson either as his battering ram. And then Harris just doesn't potentially have that subtlety that a lot of other centres do have. And I think it's kind of impacting some of our sort of attacking game.
I think there's a place for those kind of players. You just have to use them as like to soften a defence or as a sort of dummy runner. I just haven't seen, you know, any kind of inventiveness that you'd think was someone like Gregor Townsend's trademark.
Yeah.
Or something that Adam Hastings in particular and having Hogg as a second receiver kind of would lend itself to.
I think I felt that there was enough. There felt to me that after a few phases, maybe it broke down after five or six, but there was definitely a little bit more structure in attack in that they were setting up lots of dummy runners and certainly the back row and Gilchrist and second row. They seemed quite empowered to put in the pass behind, you know, the rugby league lines and things like that, which is causing people to bite in. I felt that we saw a little bit more of that this weekend.
We're probably being a bit harsh.
I was going to say, we beat France 28-17. I think we are being quite negative here.
Well, I think the kind of narrative around the game from most corners has been that Scotland had this pretty awesome performance. And I think all of us after the game were obviously happy that Scotland won, but actually thought that we left quite a lot out there.
People were like, Scotland were absolutely unbelievable. I don't think we were. I think we did very well at capitalising our opportunities and professionally beating a side that was down 14 men.
Yeah.
But I think we could... I just think there's more. That's the thing. It's not sort of, it's not as if Scotland are playing at their best. I actually think that... I think where Ali Price has had an okay tournament, I just wonder if it's time to refresh things. I just don't think he's... He followed up Chris Harris's break well, to be fair to him.
Yep.
But I just think his pass isn't as sharp as it could be, and he's not really offered much of an attacking threat this Six Nations.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just the way that Townsend wants to use him, wants to play off 10.
He's playing against his, if he's picked at the weekend, which we understand there's not going to be a huge number of changes.
Yeah.
He's playing against his nemesis, Gareth Davis.
Nah, because Thomas Williams will be playing. Ah,
well, then he's not playing against his nemesis. But 3 years ago was the absolute disaster in Cardiff with, it was Harris's debut.
Was that 3 years ago?
Two years. It was only 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But actually, that makes a sense. That makes sense. And Ali Price threw that interception.
Yes. We did say he'd never do it again. I think he did it again for Glasgow, but
I think
I don't think he'll ever do that again for Scotland.
Okay. See you in a week.
The one thing about Adam Hastings, and I feel like I'm being incredibly harsh to Adam Hastings after what was, you know, a relatively good game, is he rushes up a lot in defence and misses and a lot of...
Have you got stats of him? He must have missed quite a few.
He missed 8 of 16.
8?
Yeah. And he was offside literally all the time during that game, which he didn't get picked up on, and that's fine. But he does that rush up, and he was just getting brushed off quite a few times.
But I think he was kind of one of the victims of that deliberate sort of high tackling. The lot of times he was going in, but you know, when you're against a bigger guy, you're just going to get brushed off.
Yeah. But yeah. No, it was good. And then obviously back three, Maitland scored 2 tries for... I think it was the first time he's ever scored 2 tries for Scotland.
Really?
Yeah.
Might have been.
And I actually thought Hogg looked pretty sharp.
Yeah.
He was looking really good. I do want him to even more get into that like second receiver role.
Yeah.
Because I actually think when we've got the best Scotland have ever played is when it was Russell and him working together in that little pivot against New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it was fan fucking tastic.
Yeah.
And for some reason he just feels like he's just doing a little bit less in that role as the sort of second distributor.
Mm. You've mentioned the forbidden word.
Oh, Finn.
How do you think Finn Russell is feeling after round five of the Six Nations?
I mean, I think there was, while this whole thing was going along, there's rumours that sort of the camp was divided and that sort of thing. And I think during the Six Nations, I don't think we've seen much evidence of that being the case. I think that everyone seems to have really got behind Adam Hastings. I think the reaction when Stuart McInally scored his try, that was like the happiest I've seen Scotland players in a long, long time. Absolutely delighted that he scored. So
was he.
Yeah, he would be.
The ball into the crowd.
And he's obviously had a pretty sort of stressful time recently with rugby. So I think that Finn is maybe sort of thinking...
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Maybe I have made a mistake here. I don't know. But
this does not look like a broken camp. Now, maybe we're reading too much into a big win.
Mm.
But, you know, you win, you have a decent performance against Ireland. Maybe you're unlucky to lose. England's a toss-up. You then go to Italy and win. You beat France at home, which is all you can be asked to do.
Mm.
You're going to Wales on the final day with a bit of momentum. And Finn's gambit, which was essentially, I'm not coming back while Gregor's still there in the Sunday Times, now looks pretty churlish, and he's got to come back into camp to a united group and make the case for him being accepted back in.
Yeah.
Now, on rugby merit, sure, he probably still is a better rugby player than Adam Hastings. In fact, he definitely is. But
I wouldn't be surprised if sort of when he comes back, or if he comes back into camp, that he isn't starting right away.
Has to earn back the respect and trust of the group.
I think you
do. For a national team, earning the right to start, what does that mean exactly?
Well, if you come into camp, if you do things like you maybe apologise or you work extra hard
if he works hard for a week, should he then start ahead of Adam Hastings?
Well, I don't know about like the timeline of it.
Okay, but I guess is that what we're saying is if he comes in and works hard for a set period of time, then he should start ahead of Adam Hastings.
He probably will, right? Because he's a better player.
I think so. Yeah. But I guess it's kind of an interesting, is that you just got to prove for a certain period of time.
Yeah, but I think it's that you've committed. Yeah, there's a few things going on, but I think as well, just from sort of Townsend's perspective as well.
Yeah.
And he's only doing that, right, because he wants to drive the best sort of team environment and culture, and he wants to set standards that everyone has to live up to. I think that it would be likely that Townsend would say to him, well, you're on the bench, or yeah, you train well, but we're going to give it to Adam this week.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'd be really, really interesting, when he gets back in the squad, how Townsend manages it, because as you said, I think everyone kind of knows that Finn Russell is still a better 10 than Adam Hastings at the moment.
Mm.
And so it's kind of like, what does he have to do and what are his actions that get him to the point that Tooney is comfortable picking him ahead of Adam Hastings, who he's put his faith in for this Six Nations and has performed very admirably.
Go to training. Go to camps.
Not apologise to the squad.
Not chop wet.
Not chop more than
Don't have wets. More than two beers.
Yeah. Have two beers.
Two steins.
And then make a point of being like, Gregor, that's two beers. I'm off to bed. That is it.
Yeah.
Or maybe just have one and be like, I'm not going to even have
Have one. Why did you ask the question? You knew the answer.
It's exactly. Like growing.
To be fair, you did see on Ben Tamfuna.
Yeah.
His Instagram today, he had like an Instagram video of him squatting.
Yeah.
And he squatted, I think, I was trying to work it out. It looked around either like maybe like 220 kilograms. It's like next to him. Finn Russell was squatting, and I literally think he had 70 kilograms on. Genuinely, the difference
what?
In number of plates. It's like Ben Tamfuna's got like five plates on each side and looks to have like, I don't know, basically the two lighter colours that he has
Was his bar bending? Was bar bending?
It was a heavy bar. But yeah, you can just see in the background that Finn's like to his left and also got the squat rack set up.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just smashing out three sets of 5 or 70 kgs.
And that's fine. Just chill out.
Yeah.
Go do a bit of break dancing and then like, that'll do.
Absolutely fine. So he's in the gym. He's working hard. But no.
He's kept his head down a little bit since the initial.
Yeah.
It's all, the heat's sort of come off it now.
And I think
250 kilograms.
250?
Yeah.
Is it?
I'm trying to find Finn's one.
Do you think it's now, we're now in a position
left hand side of the video.
80.
Regardless.
80.
20 and a 10 on each side.
Oh my God. Are we in the stage now where Townsend's safe? Completely.
Yeah.
I think we have
to. 100%.
Even if we get 50 put on us at the Millennium Stadium.
He's fine. He needed the two wins.
Two wins and he's fine.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen this weekend? Wales have obviously got massive injury problems. The secret source has slid into the DMs. He says that bar a couple of niggling injuries, Scotland are going to be unchanged.
Do you believe the source now?
I do. I really did not trust him. Like, I thought Nick Haining and Grant Gilchrist was a step too far, and I was like, the source is trying to fuck us over. But He's come through. The man, or woman, trust the oracle.
Oh,
no.
Man or woman.
Yeah.
Gregor Townsend. Yeah, person. He knows what he's talking about.
Teenagers slipping into our DMs.
So we think Scotland are going to go unchanged off the back of two big wins down to the Millennium Stadium. Injury-ravaged Wales. A chance to actually end, obviously it's a strange tournament, but end a tournament on a high if they win in Wales, top of the table. First win since 2002.
They don't even have to get a bonus point to be top of the table. They literally just have to win.
Think about Vodka Revs in Cardiff. You're going to be there, Alan.
Well, yeah, I might be. The guy I'm going with is literally self-isolating for coronavirus.
Oh, yeah, he is, isn't he? Oh, tickets going. Sit with Alan.
There could be some spare tickets going, although I might have coronavirus.
Worth it to see a win?
Potentially. It's a dark path.
No.
I reckon if you offered me a win, a big win in Cardiff... and coronavirus.
Would you take it?
And a night out in Vodka Revs in Cardiff.
Guaranteed that you were okay.
Guaranteed you would, I don't
you
die.
You wouldn't take it because you'd have to go on a night out. So
this is when you become the super spreader and they're having to like find everyone who went to Vodka Revs on Saturday night in Cardiff to see who you've been in contact with.
Drinking cheeky Vimto's in Vodka Revs in Cardiff. Yeah, I mean, I'd probably take it.
But no, I think Scotland will probably be pretty confident, to be honest. You know?
Yeah.
It's, I saw
Jake Ball's.
Jake Ball's out.
Is he?
Pretend Lee Halfpenny's picked up a pretty bad injury. So, I don't know. I feel like Pivac's weirdly got a lot to play for, but I actually don't think the Welsh team itself will feel like they've got that much to play for. Final game.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I just wonder if Wales, like, without Gatland, are just a genuine, like... to be fair to them against England, they don't give up. And the same against France.
Yeah.
You know, they keep playing. And they're not having to let up. But, yeah, I just think without Gatland, they just don't have that sort of same edge to them.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to transition to a different style.
Yeah.
But which is more expansive.
We'd probably rather play against that, Scotland would, than against England or Welsh teams of sort of the last few years that have just overpowered us, really.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
And I think, I just kind of think, like, particularly like the Welsh front row at the moment, I don't think is that strong. I think that Sutherland and Ferguson particularly Sutherland, like standout props of the tournament.
Yeah.
Yep.
They'll be wanting to have a go at these guys. As you say, maybe just that win against France, all the players would just be super confident, you'd like to think.
Yeah, no, agreed. I think you're right in terms of that front five, especially with Jake Ball being injured, doesn't look that strong.
So who's going to come in second row?
The
Adam Beard? Or
bringing Shingler.
Fine.
And then Parks looks a bit off his game.
And yeah, I know what you mean.
Whilst Nick Tompkins in attack is sweet.
He's missed a lot of it. Yeah, but we are only sending Chris Harris down his channel.
Chris Harris pammed off Williamson.
Yeah.
Man, pam off whoever the fuck he wants.
I think we're being unduly harsh on Chris Harris. I think he had a good game. Come on.
No, he did. He did.
And he seems like such a very nice
guy. I know. And he puts in a good shift, to be fair to him. I mean, Wales are still favourites with the bookies.
So, yeah, 7-point favourites. But
and I think that's about fair.
We do regularly shit the bed when we go to Cardiff.
Yeah. And again, I've always found it very strange because, and we know we had the conversation with Richie Vernon about it, is because they know these players and they play against them all the time and they beat them all the time.
Yeah, that is true. But then at the same time, like Edinburgh and Glasgow beat Ospreys routinely, but Alan Jones never plays to the Ospreys.
Yes, that is true.
But I even think like sort of, Alwyn Jones looked maybe his age a bit against England. It was a very good England side.
I can't remember a time where I've felt as confident that Scotland could beat Wales.
Oh, Alan.
I think hopefully sort of the stars are aligning slightly in Scotland's favour here.
Yeah.
Does feel a little bit that way. The weather's meant to be dry, so shouldn't be any concerns down there.
Mm.
Roof open, off we go.
Nice sort of early kick or 2:30.
It's 2:30.
Is it? I thought it was 2:15.
Oh, is it? Right. Turn up at 2:30, it's like 50 minutes in. No, it's. I think it's gonna be a good game as well.
So Saturday night, we're top of the table.
Yeah,
top of the league until October, and then we might still be.
And then there was no chance we will be.
I'm still holding out hope.
Why are they gonna play those other games? What's the point?
Let's just world rugby it.
Exactly.
Two pointers all round.
This is Dodson's chance to earn that big bonus. Just comes out. Massive legal case against the world rugby. It's like, yeah.
If,
I can't play.
If we were to win with a bonus point, I don't really know how the points work from that. We would get to 15. And then if they gave England and France draws against Ireland, then Scotland, England and France would all be on 15 points. And as long as we had +2, beat Wales by more than 2 points, our points difference would be the best. However, I don't know if it then goes to points difference or whether it goes to heads to head. We would have the most bonus points.
So we're looking good.
Well, we don't know what the system is.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. I don't understand why it's not.
This is Dodson's 3D chess. It'll all become clear. We're going
to
win it.
You're petitioning the Remco to double his.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
His compensation package.
It's very exciting. Alan, you've got a little quiz to see us through, and then we'll finish off with some predictions.
I do have a very quick quiz. Just as a quick one, I'll give you a thing. Who do you think is the Scotland player who's in the top three for most successful tackles across the whole Six Nations? There's one Scotland player in the top three across all teams.
Scott Cummings?
No.
So it's the highest number of tackles or highest success rate.
Most successful tackles. Mauro Tauge has had the most on 74. Bernard Leroux is second on 72.
Hold on.
And then there's Scotsman in third. And the only Scotsman in the top 10.
Richie.
No, Hamish Watson.
Is Watson.
Hamish Watson.
Which is interesting because you never really think of him as being like the top of
he's
the
tackle.
He's
got mad
charts.
Work rate, actually.
But I think he had 21 tackles against France at the weekend.
Yeah.
Initially, Stuart Hogg is top of meters made.
Is he?
Which I hadn't really realised.
Good lad.
So, I've lost the quiz, actually. Oh, here we go. So, I'm going to take you back a whole decade to Scotland v Wales at Millennium Stadium. Don't know if you remember the game.
The horror show.
The Shane Williams try at the end.
Yep.
So for Wales to win 31-24. Who were the two Scotland players to be sin-binned in that match?
I know one of them. Scott Lawson?
Yeah, he was the one that went off last.
I think I know the other one, but I'll give you a shot.
I don't think I know it.
Was it Godman?
It was Godman.
Was it?
Yeah.
Godman also missed when Halfpenny went down the wing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Phil, friend of the pod. He also got stood up by Shane Williams and like pammed off to the ground, and then he passed it to Halfpenny. It's like,
what a terrible day.
That was a bad day.
Can you, 2014, Millennium Stadium, can you remember the score?
Is that the year you and I were there?
It was
53-3.
Yeah, we got three on the boards.
So he's got 55-3. Yeah, to go down two, not up two. 51-3.
Oh my word, that was so bad. Great weekend.
A great weekend, but.
But. Yeah. At least that happened 2 minutes into the match.
And we were like,
so
well,
it was over. Before we knew it.
Yeah, that was awful.
It's about like Jamie Roberts got two tries that day.
Yeah.
It's like. And he was like tearing. He was like, he was we were making Jamie Roberts look way better than he actually is.
I think it's Phillips as well.
Yes, it was.
Annoying person.
The Scotland backline that day though was like actually quite sweet. I think.
Well, I'm trying. Duncan Weir not a 10.
Duncan Weir was. A 10.
so yeah.
Dunbar was playing though.
Dunbar. I can't remember.
Honourable mention for Duncan Weir's 90 seconds against France.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
one tackle, one
hit,
turnover.
And knocked it on.
Yeah.
So.
On Jelly Baby.
Sent the guy into the next week.
I thought they could have given him more time. I think 90 seconds is not enough.
It's pointless.
It is pointless. If we were winning by enough that we were going to win that game, I just don't understand why you wouldn't put someone on for like 5 minutes.
It's quite easy to forget.
Yeah.
Tuny couldn't see it.
He's quite small. I wonder, it's probably a stupid point, but whether you're just sort of, oh Christ, you haven't used up all our subs.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
And the fact, who was coach for that, the 51-3 match?
2014.
I'm going to say Scott Johnson.
Scott Johnson's final game as Scotland coach was us.
What was his win record?
So we lost 51-3 and Scotland were like, you need a promotion. You will be made director of rugby because of what's happened here.
Yep.
Or you, he came in, you are the man to fix this long-term mess.
Or he came in and they were like, what the hell's happened? He's like, you need me to have a more holistic role. He's down in the weeds as coach.
He's on big picture stuff.
You know what? We're the ones who are... Well, sorry, he's the one who's laughing.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the quiz done.
That was a lovely quiz.
That's all right.
Nice little trip down memory lane.
People like that, hopefully.
Not many great memories at the Millennium Stadium.
When did we last win at the Millennium Stadium?
2002.
Oh, my
God. Tooney was playing then.
Oh, my God.
That's how long ago it was.
That was a long, old time ago. Yeah. Right, until Saturday, though.
Until Matt, Saturday.
Give us your prediction. Let's finish up on some predictions.
I think Wales at home are still a bit too strong. So I'm going to say Wales by... But it'd be close. Wales by 5.
Okay, Alan, come on. Give us some positivity. Why not?
I'm going to go... I genuinely think that Scotland are going to win this game. I think that Scotland pack is going to outpack the other pack.
Okay.
And then...
Just outpack them, guys.
And then
it's
I think...
secret to winning matches.
It's going to be the Stuart Hogg and Blair Kinghorn show.
Oh, the Blair Kinghorn show.
I think Blair Kinghorn's been very solid, and he is owed a big game. And I think this weekend could be it. So I'm going to go for a Scotland win by 9.
By 9?
9?
Yeah, I'm going to go for like a 29-20.
Would absolutely love my to word. See it. I think it'll be a Scotland win, but slightly less than that. And I think it'll be the Chris Harris show. Redemption is spelt Chris Harris this weekend after his trip to Cardiff 2 years ago.
The only reason I'm actually predicting a loss is because I predicted a loss against France. I'm hoping that, you know, that's how the world works, that we'll get a win.
Yeah, I think that is how
you know what I mean.
I suppose the rogue thing is it still might not take place.
Yeah, you know.
It is Tuesday night. There is a chance that it may not take place.
It seems
place.
Like every day there's progressively
stuff
worse
stuff is getting
news.
Worse.
Yeah.
Today a lot of stuff got shut down.
Yes. Mm.
Italy got shut down. Yes.
Italy
a whole
got
country.
Shut.
And a lot of, basically all sport in like Spain, France, Italy, and a lot of sport in Germany and Austria.
I think American stuff got stopped as well.
Yeah. And then Ireland have cancelled their Euro football, Euro qualifier, which is in like 2 weeks' time. Just the UK, they're like, just give it a few more days.
It's not going to take out Scotland, Israel at Hampden, is it?
It probably will.
Probably will, won't it?
Now that Billy Gilmore's turned up.
Ah, big Billy. Why is he in the under-21s, though?
Why is he in the under-21s? He's starting for Chelsea.
I feel we've like felt that we've stopped recording and we're just talking about general shit.
I was going to say one last thing. It's a shout-out to our friends in Washington, D.C. Another big win.
Yes, the OGs.
Another big win for the OGs.
The good
against
guys.
Against Rugby Atlanta.
Huge.
They're second in the Eastern Conference of Major League Rugby.
Scott, a try of theirs was going, not viral on Twitter, but a few people shared it on Twitter. Coast to coast, very nice.
Yeah. I find it really confusing because they play on American football pitches and all
it
the
looks like they're running out.
There.
Yeah.
It's
how do
so
they play?
Strange. Oh, it must be so confusing for players.
Mm.
But anyway, congratulations to the OGs. As ever, it's a standing request for you to bring us out to DC to watch a game.
Yeah.
Please do get us out there. To the rest of you who cannot offer us sweet trips to the US, just follow us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and send us some bloody emails, thistlerugby@gmail.com. We will be back next week as unofficial Six Nations champions. Cheers.
Cheers.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.